Welcome to the Amazon Legends Podcast, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became powerful sellers, also experts specializing in helping sellers, and both former and current Amazon employees who will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here's your host, Nick Urisin.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My guest today is an author, speaker, and the host of Training Unleashed podcast. He is currently the co-founder and board member of the Empowery e-commerce cooperative. You're going to hear something very new. I've never heard this kind of stuff before, but it's crazy. It's so good for sellers. When he's not working, he's avid skier. And with that, everybody, meet my guest, Evan Heckel. Welcome to the show, Evan.
Great to be here, Nick. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I can't wait to hear about the organization. But before that, tell me, when you and I discussed, you had a formula for hypergrowth. What is that formula?
Well, the key for hypergrowth is to learn from other people's mistakes and to learn from other people's successes and to play the game and bruise your toe and learn by trial and error is the definition of insanity in my opinion. So the key is to find people that are successful and figure out what they're doing, not just what made them successful, but what mistakes did they make, and learn. And then you're going to put yourself in a position to hypergrow, because the key to hypergrowth is not just to improve sales, but it's also to improve profitability and to do it intelligently. And that's what a co-op is all about. A co-op is a group of people that you can trust, that you get to know at a serious level. It's not just like a networking group. Literally, when you're part of a co-op, you're one of the owners, and the other people in the co-op are fellow owners. And the candidness, the opportunity to learn from each other, to get best practices, speeds up growth in an amazing way. To give you an idea, it's very common in the cooperative world, from my experience, for someone to increase their business in the first 2 years by 3 to 4 times when they join a co-op, because they start to learn best practices. They learn from each other, they get inspired, they become competitive in a very positive way. And that's the key to hypergrowth.
So, I mean, I understand. So Empowery is a co-op. And I know that you have members that provide this. But for people, they cannot always find a co-op to join. I'm sure they can reach out to you. I have one question. Even in your co-op, this may be an issue, because this is something we found. People don't want to tell the world they failed at something. It's a somewhat of a confidential issue for them. For some people, it's a pride issue. For some people, it's ego. So, you know, and everybody has ego. So what you are talking about is really have some kind of a support group around you. So that way you can go to them when you are spinning your wheels, or even before you do anything, study what others have done. That's what you are talking about, right?
Yeah. And let me tell you something. I've had huge success in my life. I've managed a $5 billion business. I bought a bankrupt $700 million business, turned into a $2 billion business. I've started over 20 businesses. I've had exit strategies with over $100 million exits. And I have failed tons in my life. Tons in my life, okay? And I'm happy to share the times that I've failed and the lessons that I have learned, because you can't succeed in life without failure. And I embrace it. You know, it's part, you know, it, you know, I have a statement, Nick, and this is an honest, truthful statement. I hope my biggest failure is yet to come. Because if my biggest failure is not yet to come, I have stopped trying.
So, Evan, let me share this with you. Okay. So this is, you're gonna laugh at it. And then also it's gonna make you proud. I'm an immigrant. So I wasn't born in this country. So I came to this country with a vision to start a business. So it's not like, you know, I was running away from something. I was looking for asylum. Not none of those things. I already had a very successful business, and we had a U.S. operation going for a dot-com startup outside the U.S. And when we sold that company, my exit put me here in the U.S. because by choice. I said, I want the rest of my life to be in the United States. Plus, I see a much better and brighter future for the internet business in the United States rather than outside. So I came here. Things turned upside down, and I ended up in $250,000 debt. So I have no friends, no nothing. And I joined the Rotary International Club, yep, which is all about service. I made very good friendships. And there was one gentleman there who was a lecturer, was a doctor, and was all about spinal stuff. And we were talking one day, such a great gentleman. And we were talking about problems and things that will get in the way. And in service business, without any money, there's always obstacles, there's always failures. So I kept bringing up these things that may cause a project to fail. And this is the moral of the story. He turned to me and he said, Nick, in America, we don't have obstacles. If we see something in front of us, we try to find a way to get over it, under it, around it. Either way, we get ahead of it. So obstacles don't matter. You just have to figure out how to deal with it. So therefore, I don't see obstacles in general. When something happens, I see it as a test for myself to see how it is that I can deal with it. So I totally hear. At the same time, there is another thing. It's easy for people who are successful but failed in the past to say I failed, but rather than those who are failing at the time that they are failing, they don't want to say it to anybody, right? I mean, that's the issue.
You know, life and humility is an important, you know, having humility in your life is an important trait. The time you need help and support is the most is when something is failing. But I concur with you. People don't want to raise their hand and say, hey, I'm a failure. But people do want to raise their hand and say, I need support. I could use help. I love what you talked about with the Rotary Club, because a Rotary Club is a group of people that are working together, helping and supporting each other, but in very different businesses. Right. So in a Rotary Club, you can have a realtor, a banker, a car dealership owner, everything. In a cooperative, you have a group like a Rotary, you have a mastermind, you have people that can help, but they're in a very similar business. And in the case of Empowery, they're either Amazon sellers primarily, or they're selling on the internet because they're looking to diversify their business. So you're talking to people that are doing very similar things to you, and it really takes things to the next level, because there's a difference between going to a conference, and I've been to many conferences. I love going to conferences, meet great people. When you have relationships like a Rotary, where you're going on a consistent basis and you're really developing relationships that are much deeper, then you can have more honest, frank, and supportive conversations.
Yeah. So I want to bring this conversation to our main subject of selling on Amazon. But I think it's fair to say that you really have to look at the big picture as a leader, as an entrepreneur, rather than all the moving parts and the ads and the PPCs of how you are positioning yourself as a business leader. And I think that's what you are getting at. So this becomes extra critical for Amazon sellers because they are always being tested by Amazon by increasing the standards, adding new features or anything like that. So there is a sellers forum that Amazon provides. You can log in and look at questions and everything. But what you are talking about goes beyond that. It's about not necessarily just on one problem that may have hit you in the face today, but in general, where is your Amazon operation going? What are some things that you are not seeing yourself that others are seeing? So in that sense, it's a very good idea to align yourself with a group of like-minded people who understand the business you are in. And that's really, at the end of the day, what you are getting at, right? And that's what Co-op is doing.
Well, and the other thing is the Co-op has a lot of respect in the industry. So I'll give you an example. The last time I went to a Co-op meeting, and by the way, we have a big one coming up in December, which I'm going to be personally at too. Our meeting was in Seattle, and we spent a whole day at Amazon as their guests. And they brought in executives from every different aspect of their Amazon marketplace to talk to us, to pick our brains, to hear what feedback we had. So the relationship that Empowery has with Amazon is a very deep and connected relationship. So there's influence that the Co-op has because they have the ear of people at Amazon to listen to them. And get feedback. So I think that's really important. But you hit the nail on the head. Amazon is a really well-run business because it is constantly evolving and it's never sitting back and saying the status quo is acceptable. I'm going to stay at the status quo. Mm-hmm. Whether you're part of Empowery, not part of Empowery, embracing change has to be your motto. Because this is a dynamic marketplace where things change constantly and you got to be on top of it.
Yeah. And also, when you put people together, you have a lot more power to have your voice heard, but also have internal resources, right? So you can have shared resources that you can tap into. So this becomes a big deal. So, Evan, share with us some, because you have people listening right now who are planning on selling on Amazon. You have people who started selling, but in their early stages, and they're running into all kinds of things. And also there's the growth process, those who are going through growth. So for either one of them, can you share with us some kind of a roadmap for a business leader to plan for in order to position themselves for growth?
Okay. So I'm going to give you a different way to think about growth and a different way to think about the future of business. Mm-hmm. So every business has a certain worth. Right, your business is worth this much money. We generally don't know what that is. But if you look at what people will pay for a business, that tells you what the keys are to successful business. So if you're an Amazon seller and you're focused in selling one product and you do an amazing job and you got great volume, your business is going to be discounted. It's going to be discounted because you're selling one product. And you're selling one product, it's easy for someone else to come in, knock you off, and your business overnight can fall. So if I was looking to buy a business, I wouldn't want to buy a business with one product on Amazon. Now, I know no one has one product on Amazon, but I'm making an illustration. So the key for improving the value of your company, which is something to me, and if you ever read the E-Myth by Gerber,
Michael Gerber,
Yeah, Michael Gerber, great book, and I've been fortunate enough to be trained and certified in their program.
Wow.
He says that you should run your business as if you were going to sell it. And I firmly believe that to be the case. And in fact, I just sold a company, one of my companies recently, and someone said, Evan, when did you decide to sell your company? I said, the day I bought it. it's always setting up that goal in mind. So, yeah. What do investors look for? Well, they're looking for diversity. So they're looking for you to be and for you to have more than one product category, for you to have strength in a way that it's more sustainable. They're also looking for you to have sales outside of Amazon, because something could happen and you could lose your Amazon business overnight by something beyond your control even. So having your business not just be on Amazon, but to have your own, online business and have your revenue not be 100% totally on Amazon is really important. And, the problem is that when you look at Amazon, it's so easy when you know the business to say, okay, I'm going to take my time and energy. I'm going to add a little here, a little there, a little there, where you might be better off taking your time and looking to create your own income stream, be it selling on other platforms or creating your own online business, so that you're not totally dependent on just Amazon. And so, to diversify what you're doing on Amazon as much as you can.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is diversification has to be part of your strategy. And that means product diversity as well as channel diversity. Don't sell through multiple channels. And also don't just sell one item, but sell multiple items.
Exactly.
Okay, so then share with us, based on everything that you've seen and you're running the co-op, you're seeing many sellers obviously doing things. In what order things make sense to handle? Because if you jump into too many things, it's very hard. There isn't enough money usually at the beginning. So in what order should a seller start?
Yeah. First of all, I'm going to answer your question, but I just want to correct something. I don't day-to-day run the co-op. Steve Simonson, Amber, they run the co-op. They're great. I'm on the board of the co-op. So, and I occasionally attend some of the online meetings. I'm about to go to their Festivus event, which is in December at Sun Valley. So I don't want people to think I'm running the co-op day-to-day. I definitely want to answer your question. I think that starting with Amazon is the right way for any business to go, because Amazon, first off, there are a lot of people that can help you and give you direction and mentor you and et cetera, but it's the easiest and fastest way to test a product and get a market and determine whether or not you have a great product. So if you had a product that you sourced and you found a great value, great product, I know this is a winner product, to launch it on a website first doesn't make sense, because you want to first prove it out on Amazon and then say, okay, I know I got a great product. I know the pricing is right. I can move this product, and I can buy inventory that I'm planning on selling and do it on my own marketplace. And my own website. So, I mean, Amazon is one of the greatest testing petri dish places in the world, because if you understand the business, it's easy to go in there, get products in the marketplace. It's a huge marketplace. Having said that, there are a lot of people a lot better at selling on Amazon than I am. So... And yeah. that's the benefit of the co-op. And what I do for a living day to day isn't sell every day on Amazon.
I advocate what you suggested, because what happens is Amazon is a platform that was built not to sell products online, but it was built as a business machinery. In other words, the people working at Amazon, they have processes, they have metrics that they monitor on their own performance. So sellers are simply held to the same kind of standard. They are supposed to follow process and supposed to meet certain performance metrics. So as entrepreneurs being usually dreamers, right? So dreamers and visionaries, the discipline and process and metrics, they're not the first things in our mind. So when you start selling on Amazon, automatically you are being asked to think like a large business, establish certain disciplines and infrastructures and things like that. So I like that approach more, mainly because it teaches you how to grow a business, how to build a business that can scale. And then from that, you can migrate whatever you figure out to the website operation. So something I advocate makes total sense. I want your take on something else, which is everybody's issue, especially in this day and age, and that's building your team. So having built so many businesses, tell us, how do you go about building your team? Do you first do the things yourself, put them in place, and then hire somebody to come in and maintain it and then help make it better? Or do you just simply go looking for someone to come in and put things in place for you?
Well, it's an excellent question. And I think it is a root cause of many people having their business limited because they don't trust or aren't comfortable bringing in other people. And one of the issues as an entrepreneur is that you sit back and you say, if I hire someone, I'm taking money out of my pocket, I'm paying them. And if I'm going to pay them well, it's a lot of money, and I don't want to part with that money. But you have to really think about hiring as an investment. So if I was running an Amazon business or any business, I want to understand as the leader how every function works. But I'm not going to be necessarily the person that's going to develop the procedures and the processes. It's going to be somebody that knows and has greater expertise. So you want to look at your first hire as someone who's complementary to you. So if you're really good at sourcing product, finding product, pricing product, marketing product, then you probably need somebody who's really good on supply chain, detail-oriented, who can be taking a lot of the burden off you so you can spend more time doing what you do best. When you're looking at a team, you always want every player on the team to be focusing on the skill set that they are best suited at. So a lot of times people sit back and they look and they say, well, you know, I got a weakness here, or this person has a weakness here. I need to fix the weakness. And I'm going to just tell everyone right now, fixing weaknesses doesn't really work. You need to hire people who have personalities and skill sets that match what you need them to do with the job. Because having someone spend time doing something that they aren't good at, don't enjoy, is not a really great recipe. And a lot of times when I'm chatting with Amazon entrepreneurs, they're running very good sized businesses and they are running themselves ragged. Mm-hmm. And in part because they're addicted to the money and they aren't sitting back and saying, if I invest, I can make more. So it's important to invest and build a staff and build a team, which, by the way, adds value to your company. Because one of the things when someone looks to buy your company is, can this company run without you? Mm-hmm. If the answer is no, this company cannot run without you, doesn't have a lot of value.
Exactly. So I have a question on the you said something very significant. You said personalities and skill sets. So it is quite possible sometimes they have the skill set, but not the personality. So which one comes first?
So I'm going to tell you how I hire people.
Okay.
The number one thing that I look to hire a person is their attitude. Do they have a positive attitude? Because I don't want to be around a negative person. I don't care how good they are. It is toxic to an organization to have a negative person. I want somebody that's got not like I'm goofy happy, but somebody that's going to bring positivity and energy to the group. That is by far my most important attribute. The next attribute I have, are they a learner? Do they desire to learn? So I'm going to take a moment and compliment your listeners. All your listeners are learners. They're spending their time to learn, right? So I love asking people, you know, what have you done to learn more about what you do? You know, what kind of books do you read? What courses do you, what's that about? I want to see that a person is committed to growth of themselves. That is incredibly important. And the third thing is, do they have the capabilities to do the job necessary? But if they are not positive, if they are not a committed learner, I don't care how well they do the job. Those are the two hurdles that they have to get past to get to determining whether or not they can do the job. Because if they can do the job unbelievably well, but they have a toxic personality and they don't like learning, it just means that they're going to just hunker down and do what they've always done. They're not going to be open to new ideas. They're not going to be open to suggestions. No one's going to like to work with them, and it's going to make your life miserable.
This reminds me of something I read. It was an article about hiring and firing, and it had three things as the principles of approaching the subject of how to hire somebody. It says, when we are hiring, first we ask the person, do you know how to do the job that we are offering? Do you have the skills? The second is, do you have the experience? Have you done anything similar to this job? Actually, it's four things, not three. The third one is, can you do the job that we are offering? And if the answer is yes to all three, you hire the person. But usually it's the fourth one that you must ask. And that is the reason you end up firing the person who said yes to all three truthfully. And the fourth question is, will you do the job that I'm hiring for? I mean, this is classic. It brings back to the attitude, right? So you may have the experience, you may have the skill sets, and you may be perfectly capable of doing the job. But you know what? You may lose interest. You may, you know, it may not excite you as much or anything like that. Then what happens? You hire them. You say, oh, great. We met this guy. He knows everything. And the next thing is, 2 weeks into the job, he's starting to contaminate the environment.
Yeah. No doubt about it.
So there is one more element I discovered. And this kind of brings it to a philosophical question when you're making key decisions. And that is, does the person have the capacity to grow? Because you can have someone who knows how to do a particular job. I give you this example. I hired this guy. He came, we were looking for a fulfillment person just for packing stuff. And this guy was an ex-convict. And it was well after, you know, his time, but nevertheless, I mean, you know how it is. There are certain laws and blah, blah, and they have restrictions. So in a course, a workshop, I had learned that it's okay to hire people who serve time. You just need to ask them what they've done to do the time and compare that to the kind of work that you are offering. For example, if you are offering somebody to work in a warehouse and then they serve time before theft, you don't want to hire the guy. But if it's something totally unrelated, like a disagreement and whatever, and then something happened, and that's different. So this guy was totally different. And in fact, it was very unfair that he spent 10 months. So we hired him as a packer. This guy grew up to be my fulfillment manager. He had no idea how to use a computer, and we taught him everything. And he would stay, I'm in New York City. We were in Long Island, and which is just outside New York City, about 30 miles. And he lived in the Bronx, which public transport, it took him 2.5 hours to get to work. He was there before everybody else. So I invested in him. And I thought he had the capacity. So the philosophical question is, what if you have someone who has the right attitude, is doing a good job, clearly has the skills, and he has limited capacity, and you get to a point in the company, he has to take on more, and he's just spinning his wheels. What is the right decision?
Well, you're asking a simple question that's much more complex, because my feeling would be that I just need to hire somebody else to take that other role, but keep the person that's doing that great job. That would be my inclination. It's interesting. One of the biggest arguments I had with my father was he always wanted to hire people that he could see them moving up. And I'm like, it's totally fine to have somebody that's in a position that's perfectly happy doing that job, who's excellent at it, that doesn't desire a promotion, right? It's totally fine to have a person that's the right fit that doesn't, if they're willing to learn, get better at what they do, they have a good attitude, they do a great job, keep that person. Now bring in somebody else, do the thing that you need to have done that person doesn't have the skill set to do. Or outsource part of that, let's just say, for the sake of argument, this person's involved in your accounting and you now need to bring in somebody who's, maybe more at a CPA level or something. Well, outsource the CPA to do that part of the job.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I had this situation. It happened with me when I was, as an Amazon seller, I was growing the operation. So when I say I was growing the operation, I hired this guy, and he started right at the, almost at the beginning. We were doing like 10, 15 orders a day. It's nothing big deal. And there's nobody else in the company, just me. And I needed help because I knew that I was going to do things and this was not going to be the case where I'm doing everything. So I hired him. He came recommended. So everything was good. Great attitude, sense of humor. And also he knew the business. He knew the actual business itself. So anyway, 2 years later, I figured out how to grow and raise money, move the company to build a distribution center. We did it together, loaded trucks with furniture. I would buy, secondhand furniture, go buy it for like $300 and then rent a U-Haul truck for $150. And then, instead of spending $1,000. So put everything together, created the whole floor plan and everything. And this guy was, he would make himself coffee at 6 o'clock. And I would say, what are you doing? I would always go home late anyway. And said, well, I've got things to do. And he would go home like 7:30, 8 o'clock. He was married. He had a kid. Didn't matter. He was dedicated. So anyway, then we figured out the secret sauce of how to grow. And it was technology. And then we go from, at that point, we were doing 50, 60 orders a day. Suddenly, it jumps to a few hundred orders a day. And then it jumps to 1,000 orders a day. So I'm hiring people. We've got systems. Everything is scaling nicely. And he started spinning his wheels. He was not native English speaking person. So he was struggling with language, for starters, to deal with his colleagues. And then, of course, as I hired people, I was testing to see how they were with skills. And they were good. So they were coming in. So what happened? This guy, because he had limited capacity. And it was just too much for him. And he started to turn negative, starting arguments and everything else. So I had no choice but to actually say, sorry. And for me, what really made it very clear for me was, as it happens, I attended a round table, very intimate, like 20 people. And the person who was there was a gentleman by the name of Doug Tatum. He was a CPA, but he's basically an investor, and he built a CFO organization, and his clients were like CIA and big institutions, so big bucks. And he wrote a book called Too Big to Be Small and Too Small to Be Big. Yeah. And I'm sure you're very familiar with the concept, right?
Very familiar with the concept.
So he had a model. He said, when you are growing, you have to apply the 4M principle. You have to transition out of 4 M's: management, marketing, money, and one more thing. I forget. Management, marketing, money. But what's relevant here is management. He said, what happens is, when you start a business, you will have a vision and you will attract people because of your vision. You'll attract them because of your personality. And they'll stick with you. They'll help you grow the company. They'll get to a point. You'll work shoulder to shoulder. Now, make no mistake. They are there with you for one reason and one reason only. And that's out of their loyalty for you. Oh, the fourth M is model. What is your business model? So he says, but when you are ready to grow, now you need people for performance, and loyalty does not pay. So therefore, you have to cut them off. You have no choice.
So Nick, let me just say this, because I think this is a very important thing. If you have an employee that was positive, things have changed in the business and they have now become negative, you're not doing them a favor by having them stay in the business. You're actually hurting them because they're not enjoying their job. They're a naturally happy person who is intensely unhappy. I can't tell you how many times I have felt the pinch of guilt to let somebody go and then to find that they find another job that they enjoy so much better. And, you know, you have an obligation to the company. You have an obligation to other employees to have the right people in the right job. And the key is just simply to treat somebody who you let go fairly. You know, don't just walk them to the door and say, this is your last day of work and we're not, you know, give them proper severance, give them the appropriate reference. But you've got to make the right decision for the business.
I mean, it's tough because when somebody has been with you for a long time, because it's they're making, of course, you know, they're not happy, but you know how it is. Happiness becomes luxury when you have bills to pay, you have a mortgage, you have wife, kids, and everything. And suddenly, as the business owner, you're responsible suddenly to cut them off their income stream. And it's a tough decision. But I mean, I totally agree with you. I've lived through it. You have to make the call. I guess for business leaders, this is must be one of the hardest things to do.
Yeah. You know who the hardest person is to fire?
Yes. Well, tell me.
Yourself. In all seriousness, people that are really good entrepreneurs who are really good at launching and starting businesses are rarely really good at managing businesses at scale. They are very distinctly different skill sets. And there becomes a time, if you own a business, that you probably need to maybe not fire yourself literally, but hire a chief operating officer who's literally going to run the business day to day, run it professionally, so that you can focus on the things you do really well, because your skill set isn't running a business at scale. Your skill set is innovation. It's buying product. It's learning. And you know, you should be doing as the owner what you're best at. And there are times when you need to fire yourself from certain tasks and things of that nature, because either you're not as good as someone else could be, or you don't have the time to do it right. And people hold on.
Yeah, and also egos play into it, don't they? I mean, people don't want to, they want to be the only one calling the shots and things like that. I mean, I myself try everything I do. First of all, I don't like to do the same thing over and over, repetitious tasks. They bore me. I like to create things. So when I'm creating something, whether it's a system or a process or whatever, I create it so that I never have to touch it myself and somebody else has to do it. So I write instructions. But it's a hard thing. But I mean, you said something so important. You want to hire yourself because you don't want to be doing those things, because you have to focus on what you do best. And really, at the end of the day, the business leader is there to make decisions, not necessarily do the work, right? You have to put yourself in that kind of a position, but you need people around you. So how do you get around the difficulties? Let's say that you've got work to do. Like I see with sellers all the time, they have to do this. Things have to be done, but they don't have the cash flow to hire people. And at the same time, business is growing. So give us your take on how to deal with that kind of situation.
Well, you know, I've never read the book, but I'm now very tempted, because I do believe in this issue of too small to be big and too big to be small. And that there are times where companies have to make investments that in the short term will reduce their profitability, but in the long term will increase their profitability, you know, at an amazing level. So making that step back to go forward is one of the most difficult decisions a business person can make. The question you have to ask yourself is, what kind of business do you want to have? Some people want to be solopreneurs or smallpreneurs. And for them, having a business with themselves and one other person, all they want, they want to run a big business. But if your goal is to be bigger, if your vision is to go from 1 million, 2 million to 10, 20, 30, 100, then you have to have a different point of view and you have to be willing to make the investment. Now, the bigger question is, what if you don't have the capital?
Right.
And, you know, this is the thing I'm going to say, and this is going to shock people a little bit. But it's a lot of times better to slow your growth, bank your capital, and slow your growth not by pulling back products, but by raising price. Because what happens when you raise price is you will achieve slower growth, which you perhaps can't afford. So you can't afford to buy the inventory that you need for sales. Well, if you raise your price, you're going to make more profit per sale, but you're going to have fewer sales and your capital needs are going to be less. So if you don't have the capital, a lot of times the best thing to do is to raise margin, improve profitability, so that you can invest to grow your business later.
Well, I mean, this...
Have you ever had anyone on your show say that, by the way?
Well, you know, ironically, this is... I'm recording this at the end of October 2022. So we had an episode come out by a gentleman called Gianmarco Melli. And he touched the same kind of concept, but his approach was totally different. His approach was about building a brand. And he said, if you're building a brand, don't try to compete with lower priced items. Instead, establish yourself as a premium brand and don't be afraid to have higher prices. So that was his approach. He says, this will give you a much better margin. So he was coming from the point of brand value. You are actually coming from the point of a much, much more practical aspect of growing a business, and that's funding it, right?
Yes.
So if you, and also, you know, I mean, think about this. Well, everybody listening, I mean, we all need money all the time. Everybody needs money. And the more money you make, the more money you need. So this never changes. So whoever is going to give you money, well, as an investor or as a lender, they're going to look at your numbers. So if you have a net margin of 8% versus 18%, first of all, it's going to be much easier to get the funding. Second, you are probably going to qualify for much, much more money. And third, you're going to have more cash in the bank doing it anyway, right?
So, oh, yeah.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah. No, if you do an analysis, a price sensitivity analysis, and you look at different margins, you'd be shocked to see how much more money you can make with a 30 or 40% drop in sales with a higher margin. Now, to the person you mentioned, you know, having a luxury, you know, you have to choose your product strategy. Is it a luxury product? Is it a mainstream product? You know, is it a high volume, high velocity? You have to look at what you have. But that's a really separate question than, you know, what do you do if cash is tight? And, you know, how do you handle that bump in the business?
Yeah.
Amazon is a tough marketplace to sell differentiated higher end product that isn't already pre-existingly identified, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have a brand, you know, bigger companies have, and that brand is, you know, very well known, putting it on Amazon, you can achieve a higher margin. No one's going to argue that. But a lot of times people won't even see your product if you're trying to create a high-end brand on Amazon. And I'm sure it can be done. I am no doubt it can be done. I don't know how to do it. But yeah. I bet my friends at Empowery know how to do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, there are many ways. It's all about aligning yourself with the keywords and your audience. And because your audience uses certain keywords, and then once you do that, then you can differentiate yourself by offering a greater value. We had a gentleman on the show. He actually spent 30 years in Russia, and his wife is Russian, and he had just returned as the conflict started. They said, this is it. You know, they packed up and came back. And he was talking about how to position a company. And one of the points he was making was position yourself as a higher value brand. So I'd say, how can you do that with a title and just a few pictures, and your competition is selling it for a cheaper? He says, well, you can create bundles. And by creating bundles, the individual single item may be more expensive when you compare it to the competition. But if you bundle it up as like a two-pack or three-pack or with another item, complementary item, and then offer, now what you are telling the customer is, I'm offering you more value. And at the same time, you are upping your sales. So, and of course, increasing your margin. And so that's just one of the
I'll share with you, Nick, a really interesting idea.
Yeah.
Take the same product and one product, package it and sell it upscale. And take the same product and another brand and package it as a value item and sell both. Let the customer decide whether they want the luxury brand and the luxury packaging, or they want the more generic price competitive product.
So it's the same product, just the packaging is different.
And branding.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about position. It's the perceived values, isn't it? That's the phrase. So
yeah.
It's the perceived value. So, yeah, I mean, there are so many tactics. But at the end of the day, you're talking about, don't be afraid to raise your prices, because that will give you a higher value as a business.
Yeah. And so let me be clear. What I was saying is, if cash flow becomes tough and you need more capital to grow your business, that is a good indication of a time where you're better off slowing sales by raising price, because that will improve profitability. It will reduce sales, which will reduce capital requirements to allow you to build a buffer of capital to then go back in the marketplace and to grow and to become busier. An issue of pricing and where you price products for a successful business doesn't have a cash issue is about strategy. And every brand that you have, every product you have, there should be a strategy of what and who you're defining. Just like you said, you know, who are your target customers? What kind of price points would be effective with them? And, you know, maximizing and hitting the right price point is critical. But if the right price point on something is $25, but you can't afford to fulfill the orders at $25, and moving the price to $30 enables you to be able to afford to fulfill those orders, at least you're making $5 more on every order.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that is about cash flow rather than strategy. And Nick, I know we're going to run out of time. Is it okay for me to plug Empowery for a moment?
Absolutely. I was actually just about to move on to that. So that's a good segue. So tell us about Empowery, where you're based, and tell us about Empowery and how people can be part of it.
So Empowery is a co-op. It's a virtual company. It was co-founded by Steve Simonson, who many people might know, and myself. If you go to empowery.com, we have a website. There are ways to join the co-op with no cost. And then there are different levels of being part of it. Every month, we have at least two virtual events. We have live events. Our big next live event is called Festivus. It's in December on the 7th and 8th in Sun Valley. It's going to be an amazing event. And Steve has authorized me to give a discount code, WINTER75. And if you go to the empowery.com website, go to events, go to December 8th, look for Festivus. And by the way, this, check out the agenda, check out the people going to be there. It's going to be amazing. And you're going to build friendships and partnerships for life. And it's an incredible experience to be part of a co-op, because the connection between the members makes the difference. And one of the things I love about Amazon is that there are tons of events you can go to, tons of conferences, tons of ways to learn. But being able to be part of a group where you have peers that you're literally in business with, because when you're in a co-op, you are an owner, literally an owner. By the way, people that don't know, there are 60,000 co-ops in the United States. Companies that you wouldn't believe are co-ops. You know, like Nationwide Insurance is a co-op. If you're a policy owner, you're an owner. Land O'Lakes, co-op. Welch's, co-op. Anytime that businesses can get together for a mutual benefit, there's a reason to have a co-op. And if you're part of Empowery, not only do you get the networking, but you get buying power. So lots of services, supports, 3PL, freight, all kinds of companies that offer products to, in the marketplace where people are buying this technology, that technology. Empowery enables people to buy those cheaper and allows people to earn rebates. So there's a buying benefit, there's a networking benefit, knowledge benefit, and as I said, you can literally join without any out-of-pocket cash. So empowery.com.
Yeah, Evan, you left out a few things to me as an outsider, because you, this is the organization you founded, so you're too close to the subject matter.
Okay.
I want to give you something to for everybody listening to hear, which is a huge value, and frankly, also talks about, you know, speaks to the integrity of the organization. First of all, those who partner with Empowery to provide services or offer services to the co-op members, they have to offer three things. First, they have to offer an exclusive rate for your members. That's a discount.
Yep.
So right off the bat, that's the same. In addition, they have to offer perks. So just offering discount is not enough. They have to offer some kind of a perk, whatever that could be, you know, an extended free trial, some additional supplementary service, or whatever the case may be. They have to offer that. Third, most partners, or I should say, most companies who operate a partnership program offer incentive to the company that is including them in their partnership program. And that incentive basically, it's a referral fee, goes back to the organization. So Empowery receives any incentive, if it receives an incentive, actually pays it back to the members.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you have to mention these. So valuable for anybody. So these are just cash savings right off the bat with perks that you're receiving that otherwise not available. In addition, the events you have, they are that there is live connection among the members. There's a community, live community, and events, webinars, so that members can be up to date. So this is not a place where you just join and then you get listed in a membership directory and then you get invited to an event once a month. That's not the case. It's fairly active. And when I learned about all these, I thought, wow, this is, and it's focused on e-commerce.
Yeah.
So
it's also international. We have lots of members all over the world, which is incredible in terms of learning and knowledge and product focus.
So, I mean, when I didn't, first of all, I didn't know about Empowery. I didn't know that there was co-op in e-commerce space. And when I started learning more and then how you operated, I thought, well, I mean, this is a no-brainer. Every Amazon seller, every e-commerce company has to be part of it, because I mean, you can't. There's no losing here. You can only be winning. So, so everybody listening, just join and go to the event. By the way, this Festivus event, is it one of the Seinfeld guys started?
Well, it's a play. It's a really fun event. I'll tell you something. The people there are just a joy and just totally fun.
I can imagine. So give us the contact information again and how people can contact Empowery and also to you, of course.
Sure. Empowery is Empowery, empowery.com. Festivus is December 8th. Winter 75 is the discount code for 75% off, which is fantastic. I can be reached by evanhacklespeaks.com. And if you go there, you can see tremendous amount of content, articles, things like that. If you go to Amazon, I have a book called Engaging Leadership and a second book called Engaging Leadership Meets the Younger Generation, which is in audio, Kindle, as well as print. And it's great. Appreciate you having me on the show, Nick.
Great. Thank you, Evan. This was great. We did not talk Amazon as moving parts, but we talked building a business, creating value, and staying, maintaining your sanity as a business leader against all odds. And thank you, Evan. Thank you. This was great.
It was my pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye.
Right. And this brings us to the end of another episode, and I'll see you on the next one.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. Be sure and subscribe, rate, and review our show. And be sure and share an episode with a friend. And thank you so much for being with us today. We'll see you next week here on Amazon Legends.